We're not quitting.
You're listening to the F That Noise podcast, featuring Pete Melia.
But we're talking about shit here.
Jamie Klein.
No one wants to smell your dirty fucking shit.
Mike Burdick.
I feel like I'm in group.
Steve Taylor.
Is he getting his balls slapped by some other dude?
And Keith Grieve.
You get a fucking sausage.
This is episode 40. Girl, you really got me going. You got me going. Yeah. So, yeah, we had originally planned something new and adventurous and, of course, fucking hilarious. But then Eddie Van Halen had to go and take the dirt nap. So we are...
Thank you, 2020.
Yeah. 2020 can eat a fucking dick.
Oh, God.
So before we get into all that, let's introduce the boys again. If you are listening to this podcast, usually we do Monday nights, but we changed it up on you, trying to keep you on your toes Tuesday night tonight. But normally we're around Monday, but I think we're doing the next three, this and next two Tuesdays, did we say? Is that what?
Yes. So, yeah, we're going to do that.
So today is October 13th, so the 20th and the 27th, which are Tuesdays. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time at F That Noise, our Facebook page, facebook.com/F That Noise/live. Or you can just find it after we record this wonderful masterpiece and you can go to FThatNoisePod.com for all the listen links, or you can just find it pretty much every damn place quality podcast can be found, especially now we are defiling Alexa officially and we are available on Amazon Music. So, yay.
Yay.
Whoa.
And there you have it, folks.
So, joy.
If you are watching the stream from the upper left, we have Mike Burdick.
Yeah, man.
And upper right, Steve Taylor.
Joy.
Lower right, Pete Melia.
Hi, pissers.
And in the lower left, Jamie Klein.
Shit knocks.
And Mike is still homeless.
Yes.
And he's currently, we interrupted him in the middle of a workout.
Ugh. These 5 pound weights are tough.
Well, he said he was, he said he was doing, this is what did he say? Oh, this is a fitness center, not a gymnasium or something like that.
That's right.
I didn't say any such thing, you freaking liar.
Well, we weren't sure if Mike's video was going to be able to be turned on because he said he was doing buys tonight. And I wasn't sure what that meant. Exactly. But
he's going into the book.
But anyway, we start every episode with a drive of the week. If you don't know what a drive is a line from a movie or TV show said with exceptional velocity and volume. And this segment is Jamie Klein's.
All right, ladies and jankums, what we have here is a...
I have no idea what that means.
What we have here is a... I'll say the next few Drive of the Weeks, for the rest of October, are going to be horror films. So this one is going to be dedicated to Michael Pence. This is from the 1986 film The Fly with Jeff Goldblum. He's got a pretty good drive, and it's worth checking out. Also, this movie's fucking awesome. It's gory as shit. Directed by David Cronenberg. It's got a great performance with Jeff Daniels, Goldblum, and Gina Davis, and Sean Strage. It's an awesome movie. So definitely want to check it out. So, Keith, play that action.
And if you're young enough where you've actually have never seen this movie, you'll understand those memes that had Jeff Goldblum and Mike Pence's hair that have been going around social media this past week.
Yes.
No, they haven't.
Andy Pence is
talk to the case. Get in the habit. The world will want to know what you're thinking.
Fuck is what I'm thinking. Fuck is what I'm thinking. Fuck is what I'm thinking. Fuck is what I'm thinking.
Massive
seriously, like, just, do the best drives have to have the F word in it? Because, like, he's not yelling this.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's the way he enunciates "fuck" again. It's another one.
It certainly makes it more intuitive if you can put a "fuck" in there.
I want to know what you're thinking.
Fuck is what I'm thinking.
I also like the fact that right now we can see that Mike is actually wearing pants. We do have proof that he's wearing pants.
Yes,
right,
thanks to the mirror behind him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Mike, you should have been bare ass. That would have been fucking.
Oh my God, that would have been so great.
Zoo. Of all the things I expected to hear come out of your mouth right there, that was not it.
Well, yeah. Jamie's just upset because he's the only one that's actually been seen in his underwear on the show.
Oh yeah.
But now, Mike, are you upset about that?
You must wear a mask. It doesn't say you must wear pants, does it?
That's true.
Well, God damn it.
No, God damn it.
Well, that changes everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So. So we've kind of gotten into this topic on this show before, but in light of Eddie Van Halen passing.
Ooh, on that.
Yeah.
That picks a lot.
Sucks balls. Wasn't it, you know, what was interesting right off the bat is that the actual news of it happening affected me more than a lot of people lately passing. You know, all these celebrities are like, oh man, that's a shame, or good riddance or whatever. But you know, that was one of the first ones in a while where I actually stopped and I was like, holy shit, I was a little bit in shock.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, when it's clear that, and again, your opinion will vary whether he's the best or one of the best or whatever. At the very least, he's one of the great innovators in music history. But when one of the all-time best is gone, and there's no chance of anything new ever happening, whether there was a realistic chance of it happening because he's been sick the last few years, whether there's a realistic chance of it ever happening again before he passed, doesn't matter. But the fact that now he's gone, and like for the fact that I never saw them live, and so now there's another regret, you know, even if it was, you know, fucking Sharon singing, not to see, even to see Van Halen live at all, just once.
Yeah. I think it's more than anything, it's because he's like eternally young in terms of like the music and the shows and the energy of the stuff they put out. It's hard to imagine a guy like that, you know, getting old. Obviously, in the pictures you hadn't seen, he, you know, looked a lot older, but how I remember him, he was always young, even when I saw him later after he had a stroke. So.
Yeah, and going off of what Keith said, you know, I was thinking about it, and, you know, I really don't give a shit about seeing, like, different countries or natural, like, you know, national monuments and shit like that. To me, things that I love to remember, like, I saw Back to the Future in a drive-in. I saw Ghostbusters in a movie theater. I saw Pink Floyd in concert, and I saw Van Halen. I know, not to rub salt in your wound, Keith, but...
Too late.
I got to see Eddie Van Halen play his famous concert, you know, kind of break for the rest of the members where he plays Eruption plus like 10 minutes of just pure guitar magic.
Yeah,
and
just
to actually see that is like the fact that I, you know, saw that, like, fuck everything, you know, fuck a lot of other things. I can say that I saw that.
Well, yeah, it's like people when they talk about seeing Hendrix live, right? Like, yeah. You hear that, you're thinking, oh, God, you just saw history being written, you know, whatever. Yeah, people are going to say the same thing about that experience that you had, right? Like,
Yeah.
It's big like that. He's on Mount Rushmore, you know, next to guys like Hendrix, who just changed everything. Changed what people thought were possible, the direction of music got spun completely on its head, like, all that.
And the thing with me with Van Halen, too, is, like, I love Van Halen, but I forget about him sometimes until I hear them. And then it reminds me of just how amazing they are. And I think that's the thing with that band. It's, like, they can leave your mind for a little while, but then the second you hear them, like, your entire childhood comes back.
Yeah,
like, I remember the first time I saw Hot for Teacher, and I heard that, the beginning of that song and that video, which is awesome. And I flash back to that anytime I hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you listen to the first album in 1984, that plays like a greatest hits album.
Yeah.
Both those. Every song is like genius, and what you heard on the radio, I mean, they're huge hits.
Right.
That's what I was asking myself, you know, because I haven't been into Van Halen in so long. And I'm asking myself, like, well, are they really that great as a band, right? And then you take probably you know, Van Halen self-titled in 1984. Like, if you just did, if they just did one of those albums and then went away and never came back, they would still be great.
Right.
They would still be.
Absolutely.
You know, so that, yeah, so that the answer is yes, because I haven't thought about Van Halen in ages, you know. So, yeah.
But I saw an interview with David Lee Roth. I've been going through YouTube and, like, watching clips of to kind of prep for tonight. And he was saying that when they were cutting their teeth doing just dive band, you know, dive places and whatnot back in California in the early 70s, he said they used to do 5 45-minute sets a night, 5 to 6 days a week.
Oh, yeah.
And they would drive. They would go 2 hours in either direction. So they would spend the entire day doing five different little 45-minute concerts, 5 6 days a week.
That's
which
awesome.
Is insane to think about it.
Yeah.
Oh, with, and they were young. They were so young.
Oh, with, yeah. Eddie started out as a piano virtuoso, right. Young, being his parents having a classical music or classical musical upbringing or whatever. They were, his father was a jazz musician in the 40s and 50s before bringing the family to the United States. But I just in the book Van Halen Rising by Greg Renoff, just the stories about just how much practicing and rehearsing, because like you see somebody like, or you hear somebody like Eddie Van Halen, and then you see, you put it into context, the technique, you know, Pete, maybe you can speak to this more than I can, but the finger tapping on the neck and the harmonics that he brought to the world of guitar playing, or his take on it rather, when you think that, oh, he's born with it, but that guy worked his ass off to get to that level, and it's really a statement into persistence and following your heart. I mean, whatever kind of old guy kind of sentimental bullshit I want to wrap around it right now, but it's just a matter of appreciating the amount of work and preparation and dedication, and the fact that when people play the recorded version of Eruption, he doesn't like it. You know why? He makes a mistake in the first few bars. Nobody else knows it, but he does. And so every time he hears it, it drives him crazy. You know, it's stories like that just makes you. And it's like on note. Like, no, it does. If you listen to the music, if you didn't write it or you didn't run around him when he was, you know, formulating it, which it started off as just kind of like freelance, you know, guitar playing that he did at live shows. And Ted Templeman said, hit record one day. And then you end up with that track that's just, it's kind of like when you think of classic hard Van Halen, you go to Eruption, and at least I do in my head. I don't know about you guys, but
yeah,
you like getting Eruption to your head. Sorry, I had to throw a little levity in there.
Yeah,
but he was a rock star too. Like, that whole band were rock stars. So David Lee Roth and him, just rock stars. And there's a clip. If you type in Eruption on YouTube, they bring up a clip from a concert when Sammy Hagar was the lead singer. And Eddie Van Halen was doing Eruption. Now, it sounds bad because he died of cancer, but he was smoking, blowing smoke rings, putting his cigarette at the top of the neck of the guitar while playing. Mm-hmm. And you see his lit cigar never falls. And every now and then he'll take a drag, put it back in the guitar, and you're like, holy fuck. Like, yeah. That's rock and roll right there. I mean, that dude... Full fucking rock and roll.
I remember when I saw him, and he would just have that cigarette in his mouth throughout the song, and it would just be there. Just it just would sit there, drag half out of his mouth, and he just would be playing.
And because he just had this. He thinks the cancer didn't come from cigarettes. He thinks it came from, he used to use metal picks,
right?
And he said where he would keep it in his mouth is where the cancer started. So in his mind, he thinks that had something to do with it.
Yeah, like, but he wasn't smoking the cigarettes up his ass either. Yeah.
Well, no.
Well, you don't maybe. Know. I'm not. We are in no position to judge on this show.
Buns.
Right.
Buns.
I got to see Van Halen when Different Kind of Truth came out, which was one of the more recent tours. And David Lee Roth was back. Everybody was back except for Michael Anthony. And during the show, I went with my wife, Michelle, and we were laughing a little bit at David Lee Roth, not because he sounded great. Everything about Roth was awesome, but he would keep stopping the concert and yell. at the people behind that were at the United Center where the concert was at, pissed off because the air conditioning was on, and he'd stop and start screaming like, "Turn the fucking air off!" And then he'd look at the crowd like, "Hey!" Just right back to it. Every time that happened, you looked at Eddie Van Halen, and Eddie Van Halen just looked at him and smiled. Every time that would happen, he'd start laughing a little bit and just strum the guitar a little, like do 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 do. And he was this cool shit. And then he did Eruption, of course. And it is, I remember turning to Michelle and saying, like, this is my all-time favorite guitarist, and I get to see him live. I'm like, it's tear-jerking how great he was. Just to see him live was an honor. It was awesome. Regardless that it wasn't the full lineup, I didn't give a shit. I got to see Eddie Van Halen.
Wolfgang was with him, or?
Yeah, Wolfgang was with him. And Wolfgang's pretty fucking awesome, too, so.
Yeah.
And Alex Van Halen, I think, is one of the most underrated drummers. I think he is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I remember that concert. He had a drum solo that was insane.
Oh, he's awesome. A lot of talent in that family. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this one, I'm like Mike, man, this one hit me hard. This is not a good one.
Well, you just know it's the end of Van Halen. Like, it's not. Like with AC/DC when Malcolm died.
Yeah.
You knew, you know, they still went on. In certain bands, even when a major player died, Van Halen, that's it. Like, it's,
yeah,
no way that we'll do anything else after this.
Right.
Which is, I think that's also what hits, is because, fuck, that's our youth, man. We grew up with that shit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't always tell in some bands who the talent really is, you know, because a lot of times there's just too much to choose from, or, you know, genius is also, it's tough. Maybe someone writes the lyrics, but they're not that great musically, say, for example, but that's it with Van Halen, like, that's it. When Eddie's gone, like, that was really the big talent in their band. Like, David Lee Roth, like, invented being a front man damn near it, like, for the course of the 80s and, like, everything, like, to this day, I've never seen a man in my entire life as confident as that guy, mm-hmm. ever. Like, it's just unreal.
So, where do you draw?
Yeah, you're right. This was a tough one for sure.
Well, okay, so I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, and we didn't prepare for this, so I might take a minute to think of some names here. But who are the people that you have seen in purpose that you would consider one of the all-time greats in whatever they do, whether it was acting, sports, speaking, I don't know, porno, I don't know. Anything that anybody you saw in person that was the best at what they did. How many of those people have you seen in person?
In any field.
Yeah, in any field. I saw Magic Johnson on his last comeback in 96 in Toronto.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, now that I read the backstory about what a shit show that was behind the scenes, it's like fascinating. But like watching Magic Johnson take shoot around and go around the 3-point arc and not miss a single shot, it was like blowing my mind from the Hard Rock Cafe and the Sky Dome at that time, in 1996.
Well, I saw Jordan play a game, and he lived up to everything. I saw Tiger Woods once at a golf tournament when he was young, but I have to say, between, you know, taking Van Halen out of the equations, because that's just a given. When I saw Pink Floyd and I got to see David Gilmour play Comfortably Numb live, I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, that's something that'll change you right there. That was pretty fucking something.
Nice.
That's awesome. I mean, I went to school with Mike Hilkema, so man,
that's, that's a mic drop.
Literally.
When I saw Jamie first take his pants off at a theater, I just knew I was seeing great.
Oh yeah, Mulholland Falls. Yeah.
But you know what, those
Mulholland Falls. That's what it was.
You know what, Steve? I include when we saw William Shatner that night for Star Trek Wrath of Two.
Nice. That was pretty
for
awesome.
Q&A. That was amazing.
Especially because he was old as fuck, and it was like 11 o'clock, and he's still like taking photos and shit.
Yeah, and though he was so, and I don't know whether it was an act or not, but he was so down to earth, and just the way that he answered questions, like honestly and everything like that, it was just the way he was. It just made it one of those experiences that you were glad you were there for.
And we got to see Jack Gardner right before he passed.
That's right.
Because he was doing the Q&A.
Yes, this is correct.
penis.
Anybody else? Seen anybody?
I met a lot of celebrities in Chicago. A couple of them was Daryl Strawberry. I got really geeked out over, And I couldn't really talk. I just wanted to shake his hand. I was like, I watched you when I was a kid. I was 10 years old when I saw the Mets World Series. And the guy was cool. He's like, oh, no, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And just, like, really cool guy. And I just walked away like, just a bubbling moron.
Did he try to buy Coke coffee?
No, no, he was good. He was okay. Though Dwight Gooden didn't look so hot. So I do regret not meeting Dwight Gooden, but Daryl Strawberry, that's all I need to see. Harvey Keitel would be happy, too.
Yes, he would.
Ed Harris. I got the bullshit with Ed Harris for a little bit. That was
cool. Oh, that would be fucking awesome. Nice.
Yeah, he was a cool guy. I mean, he's a hippie, which is, you don't really see that in any of his films whatsoever. He's
Steps into the right time period for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he came up with like Sam Shepard and them.
Yes, yeah, he was cool. Ed Harris was cool. I mocked Bruce Campbell and he mocked me. That was kind of cool. Bruce Campbell live.
Nice.
There's a lot I'm probably blanking out on, but that's just a few.
Now that you say that about Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry, I saw Pedro Martinez pitch
for
the Mets against the Phillies.
Holy crap. Yeah.
My infamous anti-Aaron Heilman story that I think I've told before. But I'm trying to think. Musically, like, I haven't been to a shit ton of concerts in my life. But that's why when these greats start dropping off, as we get older, eventually they are all going to do eventually, obviously. It just kind of makes you take a minute and just appreciate all the moments in your life that they played a part in.
Mike, was yours F. Murray Abraham?
he used to come and actually teach. I think I mentioned it before in the podcast. He used to teach classes at the college once a semester. And he, the first time I went there, I don't know if I've said this already. The first time I went there, the class before him had given him shit about not bringing his Oscar. So he brought his Oscar from Amadeus and I held it. And then he asked for volunteers to come up and do a monologue that he would direct them in. And, being a little shit that I was, I went up first. So he directed me in a scene of a play from Tennessee Williams.
Nice.
And a scene, one of my favorite monologues. And he ripped me apart, man. He just totally ripped me apart. And it was great. Really memorable to have that. But most of the people that I've met a lot of people in New York that I felt never lived up to, you know, what I thought of them, where I knew them, you know, in the movies or TV. I met, and they were just like, they weren't bad. I saw De Niro in passing, just run by us. I met Matthew Broderick. I, you know, saw these people, but it didn't really appeal to me all that much. What I think of when I think of like actors or writers that I love is getting able to see their work, you know, being able to see a Mamet play, a Shepard play, an Aaron Sorkin play, being able to see these people do what they do best, you know, or even the movies, watching De Niro and Goodfellas or any of these movies that we love them in. That to me is an awesome thing. But seeing some of those plays from those playwrights, just they stand in my mind. I got to see True West last year, and it starred Ethan Hawke and Paul Dano. And it's just one of my favorite plays. And it was insane the way they played off each other. It was live theater at its best.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Steve, remember we went and saw George Romero?
I was going to say George Romero.
That was sweet. That was awesome.
There's really three of them at the Dryden. It was George Romero. And then when I met Fred Decker, who is the director of Monster Squad and Night of the Creeps. And then I met Thelma Houston, who's Scorsese's editor, and she was awesome. Like that chick, I would not want to get into a dark alley with her. She'd probably kick the shit out of me.
Yeah, how about you, Pete? Yeah, but usually you pay extra for that.
Yeah. Well, I, 4 or 5 years ago, I got to see this guitar player. He's not famous or anything. Probably most people probably haven't even heard of him. But this guy's name was Gunfrey Govan. His name is. He's part of this small band, half of the audience are people that don't even like his music. They just kind of go just to like have their jaw hit the floor when they watch this guy play. And that's why I was there mostly. But like, I don't think there's ever been a better guitar player technically who's ever lived. Not even close. Like this guy, nobody would stand on the stage with this guy. Like nobody, even to this day, nobody wants to. Like, just too good, too talented, like, just never seen anything like it in your life.
What was his name again?
Guthrie Govan, his name is.
Guthrie Govan.
Well, is he, now, like, every 8-year-old in the world is doing the same tricks and stuff on YouTube and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy is, like, at a completely other level than even guys like Eddie Van Halen. And, like, you know, they all know who he is, and they would never stand on the stage next to him. Like,
wow.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to look that guy up.
Terrifying. Yeah, ridiculous guy. But his music, again, it's not, it's a little just challenging. It's kind of jazzy and stuff. And, you know, they're real, real music nerds. And, but holy crap, you want to see somebody who's probably the greatest who's ever lived? That's him.
Is it a situation where they get so musically technical that the overall sound suffers?
I would say it's a little bit of that. It's like, you know, if you're not listening, if he's the kind of guy who likes to challenge the audience, like he'll throw some dissonant chord at you that like it is not supposed to happen, you know, and you're just kind of like, ugh. But you know, some people, you know, who really get into this stuff are like, ooh, that's interesting. And what about the Lydian minor and all this stuff? You know, for me, I'm just sort of like, I don't really care about that kind of shit. But like, honestly, though, like it is just kind of jaw dropping to watch.
Fucking
so, I mean, it's not like exactly famous or anything. I probably could name drop a few famous people, but like I was kind of like Mike, you know, it didn't do much for me. You know, it was cool and all, but they were just people, you know, just kind of going about their life.
Right.
You
know. So there's a lot of getting back to Van Halen now. There's a lot of controversy where David Lee Roth left the band and Mike has made it clear his feelings on Van Halen versus Van Hagar in the past.
Have I ever gotten into it? Because I can.
No, you got into it pretty good. You got into it pretty good. Right. So, what I'm looking for is if you had to sit down and listen from beginning to end chronologically through every Van Halen album. What is the album that would make you break through the duct tape and run the fuck out of the room? Like, where's the breaking point?
What do you mean?
Where you decide, I just can't listen to this shit anymore.
No, I mean, Van Halen 3, it's the worst fucking piece of shit.
I go earlier than that, man. I'll tell you what, I would last right up until they started playing Balance, and then I'd get the fuck out. Like, this is done. I'm done. And then I bet Mike would be earlier.
The first album I ever heard from them was 84. That's how I was inducted into them. I was lucky enough to go back and see the really good stuff that came before it. But that's basically all I'm interested in. I know I've said it before. I'm just not interested in the type of style they went to with Sammy. I like Sammy on his own, like as a one-hit wonder or whatever he was. But when they got to that era, it just really turned me off. So as soon as his voice came in there is probably where I would die out.
Mm-hmm.
See, because I agree. Musically, I don't think it's all that different. I mean, there's more synthesizers.
And I'm not into music as much as some people on this podcast. But to me, it's like it became a lot more, I think I said it before, almost like it had to be important. It had to be like really noble, big songs with heavenly whatever. And you know, it's like, it's like so lofty. And
it went from hard rock to pop rock.
Yeah, but it's not even rock, in my opinion. But again, I don't know music as much as some. But
I don't know. I will take any of Sammy's stuff over Van Halen 3, man. Van Halen 3 sucks balls.
I think 5150 was a solid record. OU812 is kind of in the middle. I think For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge might be my favorite of this of the Hagar era. But like Balance, I just I don't know, it's just not good.
Oh, that sucks too. But Van Halen 3, oh.
That was the one with Sharon on vocals,
Jerry
right?
Sharon, yeah, that was terrible.
Do you like Van Halen 3, Jane?
No, sir.
Okay. Nope. I didn't know.
That's pure poop.
So now we know. Now we're getting to know where everybody's hot buttons are. So for Steve, it's Star Wars. For Mike, it's F. Murray Abraham. For Jamie, it's Van Halen 3. Pete, we got to figure out what it is with you.
Well, it's Tina Shaw.
I don't give a shit about anything anymore. So.
Well, I remember you got a little fired up when you were worried that Jimi Hendrix was going to get the number one guitar solo when we did that episode.
Oh, yeah. I'd be okay with that if that's the way it wound up. I'd be all right with that. It's kind of hard to argue against Jimmy. I don't know.
Right.
I think he's breaking point is shit because, you know, we're talking about shit here, man.
That's right. You get a fucking sausage around here.
See, I go back to, I listened to the Joe Rogan interview with David Lee Roth again, and he put it perfectly why I stopped when Roth left the band, because he said there's nothing wrong with Sammy Hagar stuff, but if you look at Sammy's Got Love and Everything, and the way he put it is, he's got love and everything. What am I? I ain't talking about love. And I'm like, you know, that's awesome. Uh-huh. Like right there and then, I was like, that really does signify what I loved about that early Van Halen with Dave Lee Roth. It was just, it didn't give a fuck.
I don't think it was Sammy Hagar's fault that they went that way.
Oh, I don't think it was either.
No. Oh, it probably wasn't. No. But it's just the way the era was.
No, that's,
like, I love Sammy Hagar.
I think that was much had to do with it as anything, is that they were just following the trends that were really
right. That's what I think.
Yeah, that sound was changing when you go into 1984. From the previous album, and I just closed out the discography. So, was it Diver Down before 84? Yeah. When you make the jump from that album to 1984, that sound changed in a big way.
Well, a lot of Van Halen fans, like hardcore Van Halen fans, hated 1984 when it came out because of all the synthesizer and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But like Mike, that was the first one I ever heard, and I love it. I still love it.
Fuck is
what I mean. It's exactly what I'm thinking.
But the thing is, like, I liked Eddie's sound on 5150. I think better than a lot of his earlier stuff. A lot of his earlier stuff was pretty dry, I felt like, and he had like more of a saturated kind of wide tone. Mm-hmm. I felt like in some of his later albums, I thought it was kind of more mature. It sounded a little more rich. You know, it sort of suited the times a little better. But they. Mm-hmm. The old sound, that was when Van Halen were leaders. Like, they were really kind of blazing a trail.
Yeah.
Once the guy left, you know, like, I kind of felt like they were just sort of like, oh, shit, how are we going to stay relevant? And I think that they were probably interviewing, you know, lead singers and were kind of having a tough time of it for a while.
Yeah, remember it was Lita Ford was going to be.
Oh, no, that's insane.
Are we all agreed that David Crosby can eat a big pile of shit?
Oh, fuck that.
Why don't you bring that up in case people don't know about it?
Somebody tweeted to David Crosby about his feelings about Eddie Van Halen passing, and his first response was meh. And that was it. Like, it's like, really, dipshit? That's what you got? And then finally, it, like, other people had to like wiggle it out of him to actually like pay, like say it respectfully that he just didn't like the sound. It wasn't for him, which. I get everyone's got their own taste, but
sure.
Even if you don't like the sound, to watch Eddie Van Halen play guitar and think, oh yeah, no big deal, you just don't fucking get it. And when you're a professional musician and you still have that attitude, then you're just being a contrarian asshole and fuck off. So.
I mean, yeah, he has his own opinion, which is fine, but just the way he did it was.
Yeah,
classless.
It's like you don't have to like it, but like I've never played guitar a day in my life, but I know how incredibly difficult that is and must be to do what Eddie Van Halen does. And if you are a musician who Crosby's a guitarist himself, am I not right? Am I wrong here? To look at that and just go, meh, you're just being a dipshit.
Yeah, I think as not only as a musician, but as any artist, any creative personality, when you lose that kind of innovation and just somebody who so many people like, just have respect for that, I think. Oh, well, for sure.
Even if the guy never did anything in his life, you know, to come in afterwards and say, meh, come on.
Right, especially when the guy just died.
What are you trying to do, you know?
Yeah, that's just on a human level. That's bad.
Yeah. No good. No good, buddy.
Really, what I think is he can just go fuck himself.
Right.
Pretty much. And there you have it.
Piece of shit. And I hope you're next. You're number one on my next Deadpool. Piece of fucking shit.
Oh, fuck him. For Elder.
Fuck him.
Yeah. Fuck. That was episode 40 of F That Noise. All things Van Halen.
Pizza.
For Mike Burdick. Pete Melia, Steve Taylor, Jimmy Klein. I am Keith Greaves. Go to fthatnoisepod.com for all the listen links. fthatnoisepod.com. fthatnoisepod.com. You shouldn't have made a move on me, man.
That's pretty much it.
Fuck is what I'm saying.